Happy Father's Day, guys. We appreciate you so much. Hopefully your family's letting you know that today as well. But we're so thankful for your role in your family's life, but also your role in our church. So many of you function in multiple capacities. You're pastoring your family, but you also pastor our small groups and different ministries within the church, and we are so grateful for it. That is exactly what you are. The word pastor in the New Testament describes someone who shepherds over a small group. It's only been us who kind of changed that into a title at some point along the way, but it's always meant that ability to shepherd and care for a small group of people. And obviously, we're pastors to our families first and foremost, and then we're pastors to the groups and the people we have influence over throughout our faith process and within our ministry. And we just appreciate you all so much. Hopefully you got some trail mix on the way in. So if you're hungry, you've got something to eat in the next few minutes, and then we'll get out of here and go to lunch. It's been an exciting week. I've been trying to give you updates each week. The number one question I keep getting asked over and over and over again is, when is the move? It's a little bit like the second coming of Christ. I have absolutely no idea. We're thinking probably towards the end of July, first part of August right now is what it's kind of looking like. But we're in the final stages of all the acquisition of equipment and things that need to take place, the final stages of construction. But each stage is actually really exciting right now. Pastor Josh and I were out there early Friday morning for the first testing of all of the AVL system. Just about all of that is in. We had to resolve a couple of issues that will be corrected this week. But for the first time, we got to see the LED wall. The entire back portion of the stage is an LED wall. We got to see it lit up and actually, and it's not its full glory yet, but it was just amazing to see that. We got to actually listen to the sound system for the first time. It's just going to be really nice. And if you have troubles hearing in different spots, this room is acoustically designed and engineered. There are basically no dead spots, and it's the same. In this room, you have as much as sometimes a 6-degree difference between front of house and back of house, and of course, the absolute worst is the balcony and underneath the balcony, and of course, there is no balcony and underneath the balcony, and so you'll be able to sit anywhere you want. You don't have to worry about the front being too loud. You don't have to worry about the back being too muddy. Anywhere you sit, you'll be able to hear everything clearly. That means you can move up. And you can sit down front with the rest of us. It's going to be great. We're actually really looking forward to a lot of things taking place. Let me just ask you to be patient. We enter into kind of a difficult phase right now. We're in the process of transitioning, beginning the transition. So in some of your small group rooms, you've noticed the last couple of weeks, maybe there's tables missing, maybe there's some chairs missing, different things taking place as we begin to clean, process those, prep those for the move, and then get them into the new building. It's not going to be a perfect transition initially. We'll do a grand opening probably sometime in September where we can invite a bunch of friends and different leaders from around the community to be with us after we have a better grasp of everything that's taking place and what's working, what's not working, and everything's tested and working the way it should. But it could be a little rough for the next few weeks, so we just appreciate your patience. We appreciate you being a part of that process. So many of you are helping in that process, and we're very grateful for that. And we're going to talk about patience this morning. We're in James chapter 5. We're going to pick it up in verse 7. And James is, in a sense, he's kind of shifting. For the last several weeks, we've seen the prophet James. He has been writing this letter to these believers, and it's been pretty rough. He's had some really strong words for us and some really challenging concepts we've had to kind of wrestle through and deal with. And it's almost as if James just took a pause. I don't know if he was married or not, but it's like his wife came in and said, I looked at your letter, and you need to be nice. These people are struggling. It's like suddenly in verse 7, he remembered that everybody he's writing to is actually displaced because of persecution. Everybody in the churches James is writing to started off in Jerusalem. They are primarily Jewish Christians. They are people who became followers of Jesus, became followers of the Messiah, and as a result, they began to experience persecution. Now, there is in the first century persecution in the classic sense of it, martyrdom, loss of life, people imprisoned. For the most part, James's audience is experiencing the exact same persecution we experience every day in culture and society. These people have lost jobs because their Christian values conflict with their company or their business or the owner's values. They've lost family. They've been separated from. They have been, in many cases, denied or disowned in family. They've struggled in just about every area of their life. And it's like James suddenly remembers that, and he wants to just pause and remind them to be patient, not in the negative sense of that word. A lot of times when we talk about being patient, it's as if I've got to rein in all of these emotions and everything that I'm dealing with. And really, James's perspective is that we're going to be patient because we understand our faith takes us to a place where the Lord is in control, where we're not in control. And so it's really what James is going to describe in these verses 7 through 12 is a position more than it is necessarily an emotional response. It's where we place ourselves when we are facing difficulties, when we're facing crisis, when we're facing potentially persecution and potentially suffering. How do we position ourselves? How do we prepare ourselves? How do we manage in those crises? And that's what James is talking about. So it's a little bit refreshing. I think it's refreshing. And it's just a little more pastoral and a little bit less prophet. So we're in James chapter 5, verse 7. If you're with us for the first time, we've been studying this little book of the Bible. We've got just a couple of more weeks, and we'll be switching to another book of the Bible for the rest of the summer and during the move and the transition and everything. But James is speaking to us today. So we're James chapter 5, verse 7. Therefore, brothers and sisters, you'll see this phrase over and over again. It's just a reminder. He's talking to Christians. It's not that it's irrelevant to non-Christians or the unchurched, but he is speaking specifically to Christians. And so his assumption is, if you're going to make these applications in your life, it's because you've already made the first and the initial application of trusting in and knowing Jesus. Therefore, brothers and sisters, be patient until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth and is patient with it until it receives early and late rains. You also must be patient. Strengthen your hearts because the Lord's coming is near. Brothers and sisters, do not complain about one another so that you will not be judged. Look, the judge stands at the door. Brothers and sisters, take the prophets who spoke in the Lord's name as an example of suffering and patience. See, we count as blessed those who have endured. You have heard of Job's endurance and have seen the outcome that the Lord brought about. The Lord is compassionate and is merciful. Above all, my brothers and sisters, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes mean yes and your no mean no, so that you won't fall under judgment. This call to be patient. And it's critical to understand in this passage of Scripture, this call to be patient is literally because we are trusting in, our faith takes us to a place of belief, our faith takes us to a place of strength that allows us to actually endure. Whether it's a difficult set of circumstances, whether it's a crisis we're in the middle of, whether it's some set of situations that have come together, whether it's in our business, whether it's in our employment, whether it's in our family, no matter where we find the struggle to endure, our faith in Jesus, our trust in Jesus, our expectation of God's forgiveness through Jesus, and the reality that our faith takes us to the understanding that Jesus is going to return one day for us. And as Paul would write to the church at Thessalonica, if we don't make it until the day he comes back, he, in that moment, we go and we'll join him. Either way, we're with Jesus in the end, and either way, we're with our loved ones who have also trusted in Jesus, and our eternity is secure. And all of that enables us to endure. All of that enables us to have this patience during suffering. And part of it is perspective. What James begins with in verse 7 is a perspective on understanding that there are cycles and there are seasons of life. This may seem a little far to some of us. Some have grown up on farms and ranches, and you're familiar with the agricultural perspective on things. The majority of James's audience, even those who had been in Jerusalem and have now been displaced outside of Jerusalem, understood the seasons. And James's commission, James's challenge for us to be patient, is illustrated in the application of the farmer himself, who waits for the precious fruit of the earth and is patient with it until it receives the early and the late rains. That may not make a whole lot of sense to you if you're not familiar with the Mideast. Ironically, the Mideast cycles weather very similar to how we cycle weather here, especially how we cycle weather in some of our more arid regions. So that dry season runs roughly from June to September, just like we have here, just like we have in our houses, just like we're going to struggle here in a couple of months. We'll get out of June, out of what doesn't seem like a dry season right now, but in a couple of months, we're going to be sitting there in August, and we're going to be asking ourselves, where's the rain? When is there going to be any relief from this heat? You know, what are we, you know, we're going to be struggling with how much we actually have to, fortunately for most of us, we don't have crops, we just have lawns and things that need to be taken care of, but we will be asking ourselves in August and in September, is there any end in sight? And that's what James refers to, is that there are early and there are late rains. The rainy season in the Mideast that James is referring to is October to November. That's the early rains. And so the rains come in, the seasons happen, and just about the time you thought everything you had worked for is going to die, the rains come in and they flourish. You have another small dry season, December, January, February, but right about the time you need to harvest, right about the time your crops need that rain in order to fully produce what James refers to as the fruit, the harvest, you have the late rainy season, which would be April and May, and that rain comes in just in time to give all of your crops exactly what it needs in that moment to produce a bountiful harvest. This is tied to centuries of understanding in an agrarian society the cycles that exist and believing that those cycles exist by the hand of God. All the way back to Genesis chapter 1, where God separated out land from sea, where God separated out land from lakes, where God separated out land from rivers, and God created the ability for those cycles to happen in our weather systems so that there is the refreshment of rain, there are the drier periods, and there is a cycle that ultimately produces, in Genesis chapter 1, all the vegetation, and then, of course, all the livestock and everything else that's a part of creation, our world, and those cycles. It is in that context James tells us, he commissions us, he challenges us to be patient. And it is a patient perspective. It is putting our patience, putting our needs into perspective. It is looking beyond the immediate. If we were farmers, we would have to look at, we would have to anticipate, we would have to understand a perspective that is outside of the immediate set of circumstances. You've probably experienced this at some degree or another. Maybe it was in school, maybe it was in biology class, and I don't know if you guys still do this. When I was in biology class in seventh grade, I had to cut a potato in half, and I had to stick it in water and wait for it to sprout. It made absolutely no sense to me. It still doesn't make sense to me. Yeah, you can cut a potato in half, and instead of eating it, you put it in water, and it eventually sprouts, and it eventually grows a potato plant. Anytime you've ever done that, maybe it was a vacation Bible school, you had the opportunity to plant some seeds, and you're waiting for those seeds to sprout. You're waiting for that event to take place. We did that here a couple years ago. We gave out little seed packets to all the moms for Mother's Day and said, here, grow your own flowers. I don't know about yours, but mine sprouted and died immediately. Maybe it was because I'm a mom and I was using your gifts for my enjoyment. But you know, it didn't work well for us. But in that process, our perspective isn't immediate. Our perspective is one of anticipation, and it is key to being patient and enduring our struggles to understand this isn't the end. And in reality for us as Christians, even if it is the end, if we're speaking medically and it is the end, and I am facing the loss of my life or the loss of someone else's life, it's not the end, as long as I'm putting my faith and my trust in the Lord, who has promised to come back. And who has promised to come and be with me. And that's exactly how James says it in verse 7. Be patient until the Lord's coming. Wait in anticipation. It seems so simple. It seems so easy for me to say that. But the truth is, most of us have a really hard time and struggle with this. Because our immediate circumstances feel so overwhelming. Our immediate situation feels so final. Those immediate circumstances that we see no end to, in whatever degree we're experiencing that, seems so complete and so overwhelming that it's hard for me to anticipate a better day. We know the cycles. We know the cycles physically. We watch the rain come and go. We know that no matter how filled with drought, no matter how dry it might be, that there is rain on the horizon. And especially in an arid region like the Middle East, much like where I grew up in New Mexico, where you can look across the horizon for thousands and thousands of miles, and you can literally see on the horizon where the rain clouds are, where the rain, you can actually literally see where the rain is falling. In those moments, you know there's relief on the way. There's help on the way. And the reason you know that is because you know that the providential nature of God, that sovereign ability to control all things, is our faith. And so as a result, we secure, we entrench ourselves. And that's what James moves us to in this last part of verse 8. It is what I'm calling effective entrenchment. There are just times in the situations, in the circumstances, where we have to entrench ourselves, where we just have to say, I am not moving beyond this point. This is the last place of retreat, and I'm not retreating any further. And James describes that in the last part of verse 8 as strengthening our hearts. And again, the reminder is we're strengthening our hearts because the Lord's coming is near. Now, that's difficult at times for us. The reality is we understand the teaching of Scripture. We understand the very words of Jesus himself, that this event could happen at any moment. It could happen right now at this moment while we're in church. It could happen this afternoon. If it doesn't happen this afternoon, it could happen tomorrow. If it doesn't happen tomorrow, it could happen next week. The Bible is perfectly clear that if it doesn't happen next week, it could happen next month. If it doesn't happen next month, it could happen next year. What we know beyond any shadow of a doubt is Jesus is coming back. And he's coming back to be with us and to take us to be with him. What we don't know is the time and estimated arrival. We're so used to that in our society. We're so used. We know exactly on the calendar. My calendar now tells me that I've got an appointment, that I've got a speaking engagement this afternoon. And if I open my calendar app right now, it'll tell me that I need to depart in about an hour and 10 minutes. I need to be on the way. It tells me. I know what the schedule is. Both of my kids have traveled recently. It's Father's Day in our family. What that means is Dad Uber. I don't know the current Uber rates, but I'm going to find them out. Because kids will test and strengthen your patient regardless of their age. They will continue to do that. But I'm Dad Uber. I sit there. I can watch the expectation. I get a report from whatever airline they're on. I don't even leave my house until the plane's on the ground because I know that one of the most unpredictable things in life are airline schedules. And there's no reason for me to be sitting in a cell lot that has no lights and only has porta potties and it doesn't have coffee available waiting for my kids. So I just wait till they're on the ground and then they can wait till I get to the terminal. We live this way all the time. And so when I say Jesus is coming back, part of you says, yes, he's coming back. When I say I have absolutely no idea when, part of us goes, oh, really? We don't know when. I mean, it's not just us. In the first century AD, they struggled with this. Paul writes to the church at Thessalonica, one of the most beautiful and encouraging passages, but it comes out of confusion because people have started dying. They literally believed in the first century AD, the exact same way we do 2,000 years later, that Jesus' coming was imminent. It was immediate. It was going to happen. But the problem is people in the church started passing away. People in the church started dying. And they honestly believed that Jesus would be back before that took place. And now they're shocked. They're a little disillusioned. They're disheartened. And they don't know. And Paul has to write that church and remind them, yes, Jesus is coming back, but we don't know when it is. And he encourages them to strengthen their hearts the same way James is telling us to strengthen our hearts. And he says, in a very real sense, we don't need to know the schedule. Because if we die, he says to the church at Thessalonica, if we die, we go to be with the Lord. If we live and the Lord returns, he comes back for us. And he paints a beautiful picture of Jesus returning with all the host of heaven, all of the army of heaven, and all of those who are already in heaven following behind him in this magnificent, huge parade of his glory. And he says, either way, we go to be with Jesus, or Jesus comes to take us to be with him. And his concluding statement is, we will be with Jesus and with one another forever. James is telling us to strengthen our heart. That moment of effective entrenchment means we're looking beyond ourselves. We're looking beyond our own control. We're looking for a resolution. We're looking for a hope that I cannot create. I cannot substantiate it. I can't control it. And part of my patience is that I understand that I have a different perspective. It's not just what's happening now. It's what God has in store, even in eternity. And part of that is I entrench myself at this place of faith so that no matter how disconcerting my current circumstances are, I have decided that the place of no retreat is my place of faith. My trust in Jesus becomes unshakable. It's not just a cute phrase in an old song when we talk about on Christ the solid rock I stand. It is the realization that I have built my life on a bedrock foundation that is unshakable regardless of the storm or the torment. That I'm trusting in Jesus. And so we entrench ourselves. We literally fortify our hearts. To me, that is one of the best and most effective reasons for attending church. It's one of the best and most effective reasons for attending Bible study. I'm not putting anything down. I don't mean to in any way disparage the time your teachers put in, the time I put in to be able to teach. I'm not saying anything against that academically or even inspirationally, but I'm saying what happens when we're in connection with one another is the entrenchment of our hearts. We have people who are praying for us, who are praying with us, who go through the same things we go through, and we encourage and we strengthen one another. So we have a different perspective. It's not just what's happening now. And we strengthen ourselves with that, and we look beyond ourselves, and that enables us then to persevere. In verses 9 through 11, he reminds us of the Old Testament. This crowd was a Jewish crowd, so they knew the Old Testament. They have known it since they were kids. They understand all the stories and all the things that take place. And he simply reminds them, he did this back in chapter 4, don't start complaining. Our lack of patience oftentimes surfaces as complaint, and typically not complaints about ourselves, and oftentimes not even a complaint about God, but a complaint about the people around us. And so he challenges us to have a positive perseverance. Don't complain about one another so that you'll be judged. Understand, again, Jesus is coming back. The judge is standing at the door. Take, he says, the prophets. Look back to the Old Testament. Look back to the history. Understand, see how they've suffered and see how they demonstrated patience. And he calls on another Old Testament illustration. He says, look at Job. Job was a man, if you're not familiar with the story of Job, Job was a man who had lived an extremely, almost exceptional, righteous life. And in doing so, Job had really ticked off the devil. And so the Satan comes and he confronts God. And he says, look, the only reason Job is this righteous, the only reason Job's doing the right thing, the only reason Job's faith is active is because you've blessed him. Look how prosperous you've made him. Look what a great family he has. Look what a great marriage he has. Look at how much land he's got. Look how much cattle he's got. Look how much livestock he has. Look how many crops he has. The only reason Job has been faithful is because you've blessed him so much. And Satan challenges God. And Satan says, look, if you took all of that away, he would not be faithful. He would stop attending church. He wouldn't tithe ever again. He wouldn't witness to anybody. He would become a bitter man who no longer wants to acknowledge your role in his life. And God says, I know his heart. And in a story that is oftentimes confusing and a little difficult to process, God gives Satan permission to test him for a time. And Satan will take away every blessing Job has. He will lose his children. He will lose his grandchildren. Physical loss, death. He will lose all of his crops. He will lose all of his livestock. He will lose all of his net worth. His closest friends turn against him. His wife turns against him. Job literally loses absolutely everything. But because Job had entrenched his heart, he was in that position of faith, because Job understood the perspective and his timeline was bigger than right now, it was eternal in nature, Job himself never gave up on God, never lost his faith. And in the end, it's a little confusing to me personally processing it. It's a difficult book of the Bible. But in the end, God restores absolutely everything, not just to the place of restoration, but beyond that restoration to an even greater degree of blessing. And that's what James is challenging us. Have a positive perseverance. Look beyond the tendency to blame. Stop looking for somebody to blame. It's not just your boss's fault. It's not just the company's fault. It's not just the government's fault. It's not just, you know, you name it. Anybody and everybody we blame. It's not just your spouse. It's not just your kids. It's not just your parents. Everybody. We're always looking for somebody to blame. It is the circumstances that are there. They exist. And we strengthen ourselves and we persevere through it. Because we understand this is now and there's a bigger picture at hand. And our faith is positive because we already know, we've already experienced that the Lord is compassionate, that the Lord is merciful. We already know that. And that's what enables us as believers to just have what James describes in verse 12, just sort of a simple stated simplicity. He's echoing the words he heard Jesus teach. Jesus taught, James was sitting right there that day, do not swear by your head because you cannot make a single hair white or black. But let your yes be yes and let your no mean no. Anything more than this is from the evil one. And James says, look, do not swear by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes mean yes and your no mean no, so that you won't fall under judgment. Now, he's not talking about swearing. He's not talking about getting a piece of document notarized. He's not talking about being in court as a witness. He's not talking about doing a pledge or being inaugurated into office. He's not talking about that kind of oath that we oftentimes think of. He's acknowledging a pretense, a tendency towards pretense, a tendency to assume that we're actually better than we are. And he uses that simple illustration. You can't make your white hair black again. You can't make your missing hair grow. Oh, I know. Every night during the game, I watch the commercials that tell me you can put that cream on and somehow your hair is magically going to grow. And I see all the commercials. I see all of you doing it all the time. Everything from highlighting to dyeing to everything else. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, changing the color of your hair. But guess what? What you already know is in 3 weeks, it's beginning to show again. If we can't simply do something as simple as effectively change our hairdo, then we can't effectively change all of our circumstances. So don't put ourselves to a place of arrogance or a place of pretense where we just assume we're better than we are, we're stronger than we are, we're tougher than we are, we're more capable than we really are. Just acknowledge the simple aspect of humility and say, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm not going to do. My yes will be yes, my no will be no. Why? Because everything that I've just looked in James, I'm going to do. I'm going to entrench my heart so that it's strong and it is a place of no retreat when it comes to my faith. I'm going to have a positive perspective on what's taking place. My God loves me. He cares for me. And if absolutely no one else does, He does. I can't change that. You can't change that. Somebody else can't change that. It's who I am in Christ. And I'm going to realize the temporal nature. This will come to an end. And the end is in God's hands, not mine. So ultimately, patience, ultimately that position that I talked about at the very beginning of faith is what we do from the moment we decide to trust in Jesus, and that is trust. He's there for us. He will forgive our sins the very first time we ask Him to, and He will bring us into life with Him, and He is not walking away from it. He is still there. Whether I can find evidence of it or not in my current circumstances, He's still there. And I will spend forever, all eternity, with Him. And He is coming back. I can't even tell you when we're going to move. So I sure can't tell you when Jesus is coming back. But I know this, we are going to move. And I know this, it'll only happen if Jesus doesn't come back in the next 3 weeks or so. But Jesus is coming back. And I'm going to wait for Him. I'm going to trust Him. So let's stand together. Let's worship together. Let's just lift our voices to a God who so deeply cares for us that He walks with us in our suffering. He walks with us in our difficulties.